Science professor Dr. Ross Anderson writes this, quote, "Take a moment to look around you. Every man-made object, simple or complex, had its beginning in someone's mind. It first started as an idea, a mental construct, usually with some functions to perform. Then it went to the drawing board or computer where the object began to take shape. In time, the object was manufactured and used for its intended purposes. The same can be said for every created thing in nature. All of God's creations had their origin in his mind before he brought them forth." End quote. Dr. Ross Anderson teaches science at Masters University in Santa Clarita, California, a school whose president is Dr. John MacArthur, host of Grace to You. Welcome to this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and our guest right now is Dr. Ross Anderson. Dr. Anderson, thank you so much for being with us on the program.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Sure. And just to clarify, you teach science at the school. What subjects? Biology? Just tell us.
I teach biochemistry. I teach upper level. Biochemistry,
okay.
Molecular genetics, and developmental biology.
All right.
And medical physiology.
Can you tell us a little bit about your story? I understand you used to work at another school. You don't have to name it or anything, but you had some problems when you changed over, as I understand it, from evolution to creation in your views.
Right. All my formal education, on up through the PhD, like most people, was just full of evolutionary ideas and thoughts and stuff like that. That's what we were taught. Unfortunately, my church or churches that I had attended never addressed the subject, so I never had another way to look at things. But at the same time, all the while, I always felt sort of uncomfortable about the idea of evolution. But I had nothing to defend or come back with it. It wasn't until I taught finished my postdoc and went into a state university in Texas and started teaching the biology department there. And students began to ask me questions. They knew that I was Christian, or at least professed to be a Christian. And they would ask me, well, how do you deal with this, the evolution aspect of your discipline? And I used to give them what I would call now a theistic evolution explanation, where evolution is true, God just simply directed it. But as time went on, I became even more uncomfortable with that answer. And I could tell the students weren't too satisfied with that answer. So I asked God to just open my eyes. If it's evolution, I want to know that for sure and be able to defend it. If it's not, I want to know that and be able to defend it. And after a few weeks after that prayer, he opened my eyes by allowing me to come across this book, Evolution, a Theory in Crisis, by Michael Denton. Mm. And that book, little did I know at the time, but that book caused quite a stir in the scientific community and basically was sort of the beginning of the intelligent design movement. But Michael Denton, being a MD, PhD in molecular biology and stuff, he said a lot of things that I knew to be true but had never really heard about it. And when he said it, I knew that's true. So I began to share that with my students, that evolution, there were a lot of holes in it. And unfortunately, or maybe fortunately, it depends on how you look at it, the administration got hold of that and called me in, the chairman of the department, and then the dean of the department, of the school, rather. And I finally told them, listen, I can no longer teach what I now know to be a lie. When you look at life on the molecular level, which is what I do, evolution begins to really fall apart. And, needless to say, they didn't like that.
Yeah.
So they accused me of undermining the faculty and creating confusion in the minds of the students. And I was not, you might say, I was expelled.
Yeah.
But God, what they meant for evil, God meant for good. Yeah. And I ended up with a master's university here in Santa Clarita, California.
Huh. Interesting. Now, just a couple of quick questions. First of all, did I hear or read somewhere that Michael Denton, although he wrote that book, and I think it would be in the late 80s or early 90s.
85.
Okay, all right, mid-80s. Okay. Did he in any way later disavow his own book, perhaps because of political pressure?
I haven't heard that. I really don't know, because he's written another book just a few years ago called Evolution Still a Theory in Crisis.
Oh, okay. Okay,
so
good.
If he had disavowed it, it's not likely he'd come out with a new book.
Yeah, that's a very good point. All right, next question. Was it the type of thing where it was kind of like at the school, don't ask, don't tell? In other words, you could be a closet creationist, in effect. And this was at a state school, is that right? But then once they found out, okay, forget it. What did some student tell, or what happened?
I think a student may have told, but also what began to happen, and I didn't know it at the time, were some professors would stand in the hall outside my office when I was talking to students about some of the things that I was learning. I didn't do it in the classroom, but I did it in the privacy of my office. But, you know, you're supposed to keep the door cracked, slightly open and stuff. And so they were hearing what I was telling students, and they would hightail it to the chairman. He called me in, and we talked a little bit, and I told him, I said, listen, you know too as well that this doesn't hold up on the molecular level. He just gave a little wry smile and didn't really say much. But the next thing I know, I'm being called into the dean. So I pretty much said the same thing there. So.
Interesting. And you referred to the movie Expelled. You used that word, expelled. In fact, I first met you in a context where I interviewed you for D. James Kennedy Ministries, my full-time employer, on this very subject of how you lost your job because you came to believe in creation. But just for those who don't remember this, about 10 years ago or so, Ben Stein hosted a movie called Expelled. And in the movie, he basically showed that if you disagree with Darwinism, if you believe in creation or intelligent design or whatever, you will be expelled from the academy, despite how well qualified you are in the research. By the way, I mean, in effect, if Isaac Newton were around today, he would be expelled. By the same token, I think one could even argue that Einstein, by the same token, would be expelled, I believe.
Most certainly, yeah. I was bringing more money in for research for that biology department, but that didn't make any difference. You know, it's just like, okay, you're a creationist, a young Earth creationist at that. That's even worse. And you're telling students in the privacy of your office that the new things that you're finding out. Wow. I was excited. Because I'd never heard a lot of this stuff.
Well, how about you?
They never taught it.
All right, why don't you give maybe just a couple of examples? And I understand you're doing research on fruit flies and so forth as evidence of design. But why don't you give us, in the time that remains, a few nuggets of truth, why you believe in creation and you no longer believe in evolution?
Well, when you study life in any form, on the molecular level, to me, anyway, it just shouts design, especially when you look at how the biochemistry of the cell is regulated, and when you look into molecular genetics and you talk about the regulation of gene expression, it's just so complex. But not just complex, you can see the thought. You can almost see the thought processes behind the various means of regulating gene expression. When you study developmental biology of any organism, you begin to see this is really a lot about regulating gene expression.
How about one example, one specific example?
We'll take development. You have to, in a fruit fly, for example, the head region, the tail region, the dorsal or back region, the ventral or belly region are predetermined before the egg is even fertilized. Various molecules that the mother makes and injects into the cell, into the egg, are then partitioned and carried to or various regions in the egg that will then define these different axes, the dorsal, ventral, and anterior, posterior axes. And so when fertilization happens, then these messenger RNAs, those are the main molecules, will be translated into a protein product. And these protein products then activate various genes in nuclei that are happen to be located in either the anterior or the posterior or the dorsal or the ventral region. So right off the bat, these axes are set up by the mom. Fertilization tends to activate the development of those regions of the fruit fly. When you get to more complex organisms, such as humans, you find that when cells start out as a single fertilized egg, and then it gives rise to over 200 different cell types, yet all those cell types have the same genes. Clearly, what differentiates one cell type from another is the battery of genes that they happen to be expressing. Clearly, not all the cells express all the genes they have. So there's a massive amount of regulation that has to go on. And a lot of that regulation involves, we're learning now more and more, epigenetic changes. Well, that throws a big monkey wrench into the evolutionary scenario, because we're finding that, according to evolution, it takes mutations in genes to bring about change. We're finding not necessarily. The DNA itself and proteins associated with the DNA can be modified reversibly. And that, in effect, can alter gene activity over time and be passed on from one generation to another.
Can you just kind of translate a little bit of what you just said a moment ago? Along the lines of what that opening paragraph I gave, which were, you know, a great quote from you in your an article about fruit flies.
Okay, yeah. Like I said, when you look at any object, we all know from experience that that's a designed object, and it was designed for a particular purpose or purposes.
Right, but going back to this regulation, the gene regulation, you're onto something there. I just want to help. I want to understand it myself even better. What were you saying?
Okay.
And how does that show design?
Okay, well, when you look at engineered circuits, for example, you have certain circuits that will have certain feedback, a thermostat in the house.
Okay.
And you set the thermostat where you want it, either a certain degree temperature. And if the temperature in the house varies from that, it will lead to a sensor that will detect that and either turn the heater on or turn the heater off, depending on whether it's winter or summer, basically. We see the same kinds of regulatory feedback loops in living organisms, except the regulatory feedback loops in living organisms are much more complex. They don't simply involve a single loop necessarily, but they involve multiple loops. For example, certain genes or certain stimuli may activate a particular gene. That gene then produces a protein product, which goes and activates yet another gene. The product of the second gene can feed back and maintain the activity of the first gene.
Okay.
So that you have continue to have activity of the second gene.
Wow. Okay, now we have about 1 minute left. What would Richard Dawkins or evolutionists say about all these things you've been saying in the last few minutes?
They would probably say, yeah, it sure looks like it's designed, but that's just an illusion. In fact, he has said that. He said biology is a study of complex things that look like they've been designed, but that's just an illusion. There are some evolutionists that are more open-minded and recognize, yeah, this is very complex. This really, we have to look at this more closely. But they still have to hold the party line in the face of the public and say, no, this still happened by random chance over time. We don't know how, but we just know it did.
All right. We'll have to end. But thank you so much for being with us, Dr. Ross Anderson, masters.edu, for more information. Thank you, Dr. Anderson.
Thank you, Jerry.